G'day, Francis here. Now, finding out accurate info about your rights at work and what wages you should be paid can be difficult. So why not give the Australian Union Support Centre a call? It's completely free and confidential, and the Support Centre is completely independent. Their number is 1300 486 466. 1300 486 466.
On the job with Francis Leach and Sally Rudd.
It's On The Job, the podcast, all about making your working life better. My name is Francis Leach.
My name is Sally Rugg, and anything I say on this podcast does not necessarily represent the views of my employer.
And anything I say on this podcast is probably because someone's paid me to. How are you, Sally?
I'm really good. Hey, how was your Christmas?
It was great. Very quiet.
Yeah?
Just at home. It was sort of feeling of just relief that we got here. We just made it to Christmas. It was lovely to see a few friends who were able to come around on Christmas evening, but no, went and saw Mum and Dad in the morning and then just sort of Christmas afternoon. It's the 3 or 4 hours I look forward to most in the year after Christmas lunch is that state-sanctioned afternoon nap that you are allowed to take with a belly full of Christmas food with no other pressing demands or concerns or anything that you have to do. That for me is the oasis that the year offers. Whenever I'm having a bad time, I just think of Christmas afternoon, having a bit of a nana nap or grandpa nap in the afternoon and not worrying about anything that the world has going on. And I had that moment. And that's all I ask for. I'm a simple man with a heart of gold in a complicated land, Sally. And that's all I wanted from life.
I feel like that nap is a trap.
Nap trap.
Yeah. Do you not get that? I'm not very good at
napping.
You're
killing my dreams here.
No,
I've just done this big rave about how this is the most important time of the year. And now you're telling me I need to worry about it.
I mean, it sounds like you've nailed it again this year. So this doesn't necessarily apply to you. But for me personally, an afternoon nap when you're really tired and like maybe full as a googie egg and have had several champagnes or beers, it's a trap. Like for me, I'll wake up at sort of 4 p.m. and I don't know what time it is. I don't know what day it is. I don't know what I'm meant to feel. It's very difficult to wake up. You know, my whole body is just sort of fighting me and it's like, go back to sleep. So, yeah, I think it's a trap.
There was a time when I would pay for expensive pharmaceuticals to have that feeling.
Oh, my gosh.
But not anymore. I'm through that phase in my life.
Yeah, you just sort of feast on Christmas lunch. Yeah, that sounds delightful.
Your favourite Christmas affair? What's the thing on Christmas Day you look forward to the most? What did you enjoy the most?
I think for me, like Christmas is about kids, right? And so when I was a little kid, I loved Christmas. And then I was sort of, you know, a teenager in my 20s and it was fine. But now, you know, I live with my 5-year-old stepchild. I live with her. Of course I live with her. But so.
Playing board?
But this is, you know, this is the second Christmas I've had with my stepdaughter. And so that's what I love. You know, it's totally different when you have a now 5-year-old, last year 4-year-old. It's just really magical.
Yeah,
brings that magic back.
Brings the magic back to
hey,
Christmas.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Still got a little while to work on one, so not as yet. I'm not very good at keeping them. I don't make those promises that I can't keep to myself. But can you suggest one that I should take on? Have you got a bit of self-help and self-improvement stuff for me here? Is this where we're going?
No. No. Although, no. No, I was just, you
have
know.
You?
Well, I'm still sort of thinking about mine for this coming year because I'm really big into New Year's Eve. I love it. I really love the moment to sort of take stock and reflect on the year and sort of set intentions or goals for the next year. Like I'm quite a sentimental person and so I really love that. But I was reflecting on what one of my New Year's resolutions was for the beginning of this year, so beginning of 2020, which was I wanted to not cry at work.
Wow. Is this something that happens regularly?
Well,
and it's okay to cry at work.
So
you express yourself.
I cry at work a lot. And like, I know that maybe sounds like I have some sort of abusive employer or that I'm emotionally unhinged. And like, neither are true. But I have always been a crier at work. And I'm not alone. I hope. But I think that like people who really, really care about their job and like whether that is a high pressure service industry dealing with emotional stuff like healthcare and, you know, aged care, stuff like that, or whether you just really care about the company or the brand or the organization you work for or the people you work with, you know, we spend 38 hours a week with these people. And so, yeah, I've always been a crier from Boost Juice right the way through. But like, I'm 31 now, and well, I was 30 at the beginning of the year, and I was like, hey, Sally, you've got to do less crying at work because it's no longer like quirky and adorable. Like, it's just a bit like, I'm the executive director at my organization. My poor team are just like, oh God, she's crying again. So you're not a work crier?
No, not yet. Oh. But my time might come.
See, that's who I want to be. I think I want to...
A stone-hearted, cynical, embittered middle-aged person.
2021 ice princess. I was hoping that when I brought this to you, you would be like, oh, yeah, everybody cries at work sometimes. But perhaps people listening understand what it's like to care so much about your job that you cry. And I'm not crying every day. I would say sort of like maybe once or twice a month I'd have a cry.
I think you need to write it into a contract that's sanctioned crying.
I mean, it's been good this year because...
Cathartic crying.
Yeah. It's been good this year because everything's been over Zoom, so I can just sort of turn off my camera.
Yes. Hasn't that been great? Some people who've every reason to want to cry this year have been our nurses and our midwives who've had the most extraordinarily difficult, challenging year and without whom this country and, in fact, communities all over the world would not be getting through. This year presented them what could only be described as an existential crisis at work because every day they were facing disease, death and the heartache of people who probably were dying alone because of COVID-19. And so I thought it was really important that we touch base with the nurses this year and speak to them about what impact it's had on them, how they've seen the pandemic through the experience of being on the front line and what they feel the future is going to be like for nurses, but for everybody, given that they have such a vivid and real experience of what's been an extraordinary year for everybody. So we caught up with Annie Butler, who's an extraordinary woman who is the head of the Australian Nurses Midwives Federation in Australia, one of Australia's biggest and toughest unions, and had a discussion about what a year it's been for them. Let's listen to Annie. Annie Butler, welcome to On The Job. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Francis. Thanks very much.
Now, for all our guests, you have to answer the crucial question first. First job and worst job.
Yeah, okay. So first job, there's first paid job, but then I was thinking more of first unpaid job. So when I was a little girl, I actually lived in a nursing home because my mum is also a nurse and she was the matron of the nursing home. Obviously that I'm using the word matron, we're going back a while ago. And I probably lived there from the time I was about 5 to 10 for 5 years. We lived in the nursing home. And so my mum used to make me and my sister go and do some stuff with the residents who lived in the nursing home, check some charts, but mostly go and sing to them. We'd have to go and sing either Christmas carols or little songs. So technically, although it was child slave labour, it was my first job.
And let's reveal here that your sister then did pursue a career in show business.
My sister took that probably to heart in earnest and now is what you'd call a pretty successful TV and comedy producer, director, writer, actor.
And you started a career in nursing. So for both of you, this was a seminal moment.
It was indeed a seminal moment. Actually, we really enjoyed that place. I mean, you have the child's perhaps a little halcyon view, but we used to spend a lot of time sitting in this tea room with the other nurses and the assistant nurses, and a couple of the other nurses actually lived on the premises with us. And my sister and I were very much in love with one of the registered nurses who came because she had long, wavy, thick brown hair. She played a guitar and she also came with a sheep.
A sheep?
A sheep. Sheep lived out the back of the nursing home. Rather than a dog or a cat, she came with a sheep.
That's walking your own path when you have a pet sheep. What about worst job?
Worst job, I think My very first paid job was my auntie got me a job in some office for a couple of weeks in school holiday stuffing envelopes. That probably goes down as the most boring, and so in a way that is the worst. In a way, I think there's bits of nursing that it, sometimes it's the best job and sometimes it's the worst job.
All in the same moment almost.
All in the same moment and for different reasons. Not so much about, you know, people think of the blood and the gore and the fluids generally and all those sorts of things. There's that. But I guess sometimes there's moments that are really deeply sad, and even though sad moments can be meaningful and all those things, sometimes it's just deeply sad. And so I'm thinking it's hard to talk specifically when you've been a nurse because I don't want to talk about individual people. But when I was very young and just a very new nurse, I think I was just as first as a registered nurse, and someone that we'd been caring for a very long time who'd had an accident and had to watch his wife die, then eventually died after 5 months of agony. And I guess that those sorts of moments are really, and it's not worse in a funny sense or it's more in a sort of tragic sense. And yet nursing also offers the best moments that you can ever experience.
Which is why you've stayed in nursing and are now in charge of the Nursing Federation. And in a year that will be unlike any other, we hope, because it's been a terrible year. But nurses and midwives have been at the forefront, on the front line, dealing with this crisis and have had to face enormous challenges, threats to their own well-being and safety, yet somehow continue to endure. If you had to give us a sense of how you would describe what this year has been like for you personally, what would you say?
Tough. I think it's been really tough. I think for everybody it's been really tough. I think because those of us based in Melbourne have experienced a tougher situation than the rest of the country. It's been hard also because I work in a national position and, you know, all the states and territories have been at different stages. They haven't always understood what Victoria's gone through. Though I have to say, when I speak to my nursing colleagues across states and territories, they always say, yeah, Victoria did it really tough. And we're so thankful. We're so thankful to you. I guess a lot of people are thankful, but I guess they understand so well. I think in a way, it was such a shock when the pandemic hit. So we didn't really have time to take stock and think about what this meant. We just had to get the hell on with it. Because, of course, 2020 is actually meant to be the International Year of the Nurse and the Midwife. It was meant to be a year of celebration, of all sorts of things. And yes, absolutely, nurses and midwives have been thrust into the limelight. They're kind of always at the forefront, but they tend to be less visible. And I think now they've been put into the limelight in a sense that they really are visible for people and people across the country and indeed the world. So what I'd hope is that it's enlightening now for people and that we can keep that image and understanding of nurses and midwives being at the forefront and at the centre of things, keep that there permanently.
Can you give me a sense of what the early realisation was like for you when you realised a pandemic was coming? Did you have any notion of what was going to be required from nurses and midwives?
Not initially, no. And ironically, I was in London at the time at a nursing conference, and that was in the very beginning of March, the first week of March, and the strongest theme at that point was climate change. That was the great crisis, it still is, the great crisis the world was facing. And even though COVID was out there and around, it hadn't even made this platform yet. And so then I was meant to have a holiday personally, and I got stuck watching that disappear and then having to come home and be one of the very first people that had to go into full, you know, 14 days quarantine at home while working from home and the whole thing unfolding. And in the beginning, everybody was just scrambling. You know, everybody was just scrambling. And I have to say, we'd never seen the virus before. The world had never seen the virus before. We're trying to gather as much information as possible, but you can't really get it, you know it until you see it. And in the very beginning, I think that both governments, state and federal. I mean, the federal was a little bit slow, but then state and federal and Australian people just really united together and went, right, what do we need to do? How can we do this? Australians are very pragmatic and just, I think, responded really well and allowed us to just put health first and take the measures that we needed to.
So in a way, we lived up to our own values in that we've always valued Medicare as a people, as a social health safety net was something that was important to the Australian community, fought hard for by working people, and we were going to prioritise that as something to protect and look after. Was that did that make you feel proud as an Australian when you look around the world and see how other countries have reacted to it? In the United States, for instance, where even the wearing of a mask is a politicised act. In the UK, where the NHS, initially they were standing on the streets clapping and cheering, but that's also come under enormous strain as more and more people have pushed back against restrictions.
Yeah, definitely. Proud, but also incredibly thankful. Just really grateful. And because I've spent a lot of time over this year speaking to, we have really good relationships with our nursing union colleagues in the States, in the United States, and across Europe and in the UK. And, you know, they are just in a devastating situation. Whereas we're underpinned by just a number of natural advantages, but just the platform that Medicare is embedded, it's sacrosanct. We have a principle across the country and the people that we're all going to, you know, we're going to pool our resources together and share to do the best we can for everybody in a health sense. So given that that's your public health platform, plus Australia's approach to, so there's the health system and Medicare, but then there's public health, like the epidemiological measures. We're just underpinned by a philosophy that allows us to, we will curtail individual freedoms and we will accept that if it means that we're going to protect health for, you know, the many. So, yeah, both proud but really thankful.
Annie Butler, when you saw what was happening in Europe early on, say in Italy, when in northern Italy the outbreak was very severe, and the people who were as much affected by that as anyone were healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, literally dying trying to save other people's lives. And we knew that that disease and maybe the strength of that contagion might also happen here. How frightened were you and how frightened did your members become?
They did get pretty frightened. They were scared, but it's extraordinary. I think it speaks so much to the heart of what nursing is and what midwifery is, but especially nurses were primarily confronting this. We are fortunate we have such a good health system. We're fortunate that we have really highly skilled nurses and midwives. We have relatively good staffing in public health systems, especially here in Victoria and Queensland, and good in other states, but not as good. Even though they were scared, when the pandemic first hit here and we thought, we started putting in a whole lot of processes and plans. And so we looked, well, we might need retired nurses. We might need nurses who've just left recently. How can we get them back in quickly? Within 24 hours of that announcement, 1,000 nurses, retired nurses, volunteered to
That's
come back.
That's extraordinary.
In a week, there were 3,000. The federal government combined with us and an education organisation to get together some intensive care training just in case it was needed. 20,000 places, they were just all filled and taken, just people willing to help. So even though we could see what was happening, nurses just kept putting up their hand to see how they could help.
So it was a sense of civic commitment to looking after one another.
I guess it's just, as I said, it's just at the heart of what nursing is. And so they'll just go that, how can we take the extra step when the community just really needs us. Yeah, I guess it is a civic responsibility. Yeah.
You would have heard from your members and nurses all over Australia, midwives as well, having to make really difficult choices about where they were going to live and how they were going to work and look after their families at the same time and maybe living apart from their families in order to continue the important work of saving other people. How hard did it get for some people?
Well, for some it was very difficult, and for some they made the decision because you know, they might have an older relative at home or people with conditions, but that meant having to live apart while they're giving their best in service to the community but not seeing their families. And then many healthcare workers here in Victoria got exposed to the virus anyway and had to be quarantined. So they've had to go through an extraordinary amount. And I'd say that the pandemic's taken its toll, even though nurses and midwives have been so keen and willing to help. They've been through a lot, especially here in Victoria, and it's taken its toll and it's going to take time for recovery. And that's not just, we're not talking about economic recovery, we're talking about a mental, emotional and physical recovery.
As someone who was in charge of their well-being, it must have been a huge burden at times. Do you ever feel like the nursing cohort, the nursing group were going to break, that it was too much?
Not really. I think also, like, we've got a very strong structure for our particular union and in looking after nurses. We have branches across the state and territories who offer a lot of support for their members. I think the most difficult times were when, here in Victoria in particular, when the politicking started and when people were, you know, it felt like often the media was just trying to find fault in this, that and the other, rather than, and the obsession with the hotel quarantine inquiry.
Do you think that was unfair?
Yeah, well, I think it was unfair. Yeah, look, mistakes were made. It was a thing we'd never seen. Everybody scrambling. Of course, it's about how you learn and how you move on. I think what was needed from the media, of course, you've got to hold people accountable. Yes, we've got to find the truth, all those sorts of things. When you're racing up to 750 new cases of COVID a day, what the media really needs to do at that point is give everything they can to assist the health workers who are trying to manage that pandemic. And that means communicating the messages clearly, getting people to accept it and participate and be involved and do the right thing, which I have to say, by and large, they did. But I think those sorts of things created the most strain. When there was attacking of the federal government, they were attacking the Victorian government. That then caused, you know, a strain and difficulty for both nurses and doctors. Rather than just letting that go and getting on with, you know, what we needed to do, which was how we started it back in the first couple of months.
And at that time, you would have been, and your members, working in aged care, which was the spot fire that became the inferno for infections and for deaths as well throughout that time. And that must have been extremely difficult for everyone working in that environment.
That was extremely difficult. And for a number of reasons. So that the tragedy we saw unfold, it just never should have come to that. We should have fixed these problems in aged care years and years ago. We've known about them for a long time. No one could stop the pandemic, but we could have ameliorated it. We could have let it not be as bad as it was. We know that our public system nurses, who came from all over the country to assist here in Victoria, they came from just about every state, what they had to deal with going into staff aged care and what they had to see was deeply traumatising.
So it was like working in a war zone.
Yeah, yeah. You would compare it to that. And what we found was that it was good if we could get people who were connected, you know, people who work together in a hospital or go in teams and do it together. You know, it's a real, it's quite a part of the culture in nursing to be part of a team, and you share the work, you do it all together.
You can rely on each other.
You can rely on each other, you can help each other, and you're there and you're sharing the experience. You're not just going into something isolated, but then you've got each other to also be debriefing with and dealing with it afterwards. And we know from when you compare it to a war zone, we've heard that said, and we know that, you know, that can be damaging for people. And sometimes people recover. Sometimes recovery is really slow, and sometimes they don't recover so well.
Has there been any offer and assistance to nurses who've gone through that traumatic experience to help them process what's happened and to give them the support so that they can get back to working in a relatively normal world if and when we get there? Because they can't be forgotten and just left to deal with the consequences of their experiences, can they?
No, there has been some offers of mental health support from the federal government and definitely from the state government here. We also have, there's an organisation called Nurse Midwife Support that is already that kind of assistance services, and we know that they've been working overtime during the pandemic. What we really hope is that out of the Royal Commission into Aged Care as well, we're going to get some recommendations that the government actually acts on and implements some meaningful reform so that we know it's fixed for the future, because, you know, there's probably going to be more pandemics in the future.
So the things that need to be fixed, is it the casualised labour, the sort of exploitation of workers who are brought in on a short-term basis, don't have any security in their jobs, don't have any connection with the communities they're working in, constantly moving around, in this instance became a vector for the disease, and also the for-profit basis of so much of our aged care, which means that profit's more important than the welfare of people. Are these the key elements that the Nursing and Midwives Federation are looking to try to see addressed?
They are really important factors, most definitely. The casualisation, it goes, the insecure work goes beyond that, because a lot of workers in aged care are actually permanent part-time workers, but aged care providers will just, you know, increase and decrease their hours at whim. Plus, the staffing is extremely poor, and so they don't give workers enough shifts. And so in order to make a living, they have to work at two or three facilities. There also aren't enough skills in the sector, and that's because there's no proper requirement or oversight from the government. And then to do with the for-profit, yes, most definitely. Recent research has shown that they have the worst care outcomes, but very close behind them is the not-for-profit sector, because they've adopted a business model of the for-profit sector, and they're behaving in many occasions just as badly as the for-profits.
So what should it look like?
It should look like Victorian state government-run aged care. Well, that's what it should look like.
Well, for those who don't know, what's the difference? Tell me what the difference is, the quantitative difference.
Well, the big differences is that it is regulated by the federal government, but also by the state government. State legislation applies, and therefore one of the biggest differences is that there are mandated minimum staffing ratios in state government-run aged care in Victoria. And so can I tell you the difference? So in the second wave, the COVID outbreak here in Victoria, 655 residents died in private aged care, zero died in public aged care.
That's emphatic, isn't it?
It's, you just can't argue with it. Only three residents in total ever contracted COVID in public aged care here in Victoria.
That's the standard. When you were dealing with all this, there was a section of the community that still didn't want to believe the science, that still wanted to prioritise their so-called personal freedoms above having to wear a mask or staying indoors through what was, let's face it, an arduous and punishing lockdown. How frustrating was that for you? And did you get angry at times when you saw people pretending or saying out loud that they thought the disease didn't exist?
I guess we didn't really get angry. We actually did try and promote a message. We had a whole message of nurses saying, stay at home so we can stay at work. You know, that kind of message. If you want us to be able to do the job you need us to do, then please do these things. I'd say it's more exasperation than anger.
Didn't throw the remote control at the telly just once.
You know what?
I did. You must have.
Well, I guess I've been a registered nurse for more than 30 years, and it's not the first time that people don't want to comply with a health order or a health directive or some kind of prescription. And I guess we could take heart from the fact that, yeah, the lockdown was tough, so tough. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with the fact that many of us complained about it, but did it. We all did it. And I guess that was the thing. Those people protesting, they were very small numbers, and they might have got a bit of media attention, but mostly people were doing the right thing.
Are you optimistic about 2021?
Oh, I hope so. Boy, we want to see the end of 2020, most definitely. What we want to see, though, is we want to see nursing cemented as a really respected and valued profession. And not just, we know everybody loves nurses. They think they're the most ethical, trusted, all of that. Yes, that's great, but we want it cemented as truly respected, value them properly. Not just pay them properly, but make sure you listen to nurses. They have incredible insights into how health policy should be, all of those things. Listen to them. 2021, we want that to be the year when we finally fix the problems in aged care. It can't wait any longer. So that's our number one goal for next year.
Annie Butler, on behalf of all Australians, I think I can say thank you to you and to all the nurses and midwives of Australia who did extraordinary work under the most difficult circumstances in 2020. I know you said this year was the year of the nurse and the midwife, and it wasn't the year you'd wanted it to be, but it still was the year of the nurse and the midwife, because when we needed our nurses and midwives to be at their very best, they were, and we can't thank you enough. Have a great summer break, and thanks for being on the job.
A really great pleasure. Thanks so much, Francis.
The Federal Secretary of the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation, Annie Butler, there, talking about 2020 and the year in nursing. What a year.
What a year. What a workforce. I'm really glad that we are closing out the year with that chat because, like I said at the top, I really like to take this opportunity to reflect on the year, think about our intentions for the following year. Yeah, it is really, really important while we celebrate with family and move around the community a little bit more that we just remember how and why we are here today and who we have to thank. And, you know, looking to 2021, the best thing we can do to thank these workers is to protect their wages, protect their conditions and advocate for their rights.
And do a little less crying as well. Good on you, Sally. Have a fantastic new year. I'll see you on the other side of that.
See you in 2021.
It is On The Job, the podcast, all about making your working life better. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, give us 5 stars and share the love and share the podcast with your friends. And we'll see you in 2021. On the job.